Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
The Confederation of African Football's first major tournament of 2018 kicks off Saturday in Casablanca. Morocco will host Mauritania in the opening match of the African Nations Championship, or CHAN. Our VOA football fans will remember the African Nations Championship is not to be confused with the Africa Cup of Nations. The African Nations Championship is for locally based players in Africa, and they must compete in their domestic leagues. So, for example, a Moroccan player is eligible to play for Morocco's national team at CHAN 2018 only if he's playing for a Moroccan club. Let's take a look at the groupings for the 16-team African Nations Championship. Group A has host Morocco, Guinea, Sudan, and Mauritania. Group B features Ivory Coast, Zambia, Uganda, and Namibia. Group C has Libya, Nigeria, Rwanda, and Equatorial Guinea. And finally, in Group D, the teams are Angola, Cameroon, Congo-Brazzaville, and Burkina Faso. Now, during the qualifying for CHAN 2018, Congo-Brazzaville defeated its neighbor, the Democratic Republic of Congo, on the away goals rule. So what does that mean? Well, it means we're going to have a new CHAN champion after the final is played on February 4th in Casablanca. The DRC lifted the last CHAN trophy in 2016 when it beat Mali 3-0 in the final in Kigali, Rwanda. Still in Casablanca, the top Moroccan football club, Wydad Casablanca, has fired its head coach, Hussein Amada, as the team languishes near the bottom of its domestic league. Wydad Casablanca won the trophy in the 2017 CAF Champions League, Africa's premier club football competition, but it's struggling right now through 14 matches in the Moroccan League. Wydad Casablanca is currently in 12th place in the 16-team league, 13 points behind first place Hassania Agadir. Wydad Casablanca issued a statement saying, and I quote, "After the bad results, the club's board held a meeting on Tuesday and decided to end the contract of head coach Hussein Amada and his technical staff. The board appreciates the work of the coach after he led the team to the Moroccan Championship, the African Champions League, and a place at the FIFA Club World Cup." During his playing days, the 48-year-old Amada was a midfielder for clubs in Morocco and the Middle East. He was named Wydad Casablanca's coach in January 2017, replacing the Frenchman Sébastien Desabre, who recently was appointed head coach of Uganda's national team, the Cranes. Amada also was on the three-man shortlist for the Confederation of African Football's 2017 Coach of the Year Award, along with the German Gernot Rohr and the Argentine Hector Cooper, who are currently guiding the World Cup-bound teams from Nigeria and Egypt, respectively. The award went to Cooper.
I think everyone now is happy in Egypt and all Arab countries. And what we can say here, we promise we can do our best to be the honor of Africa in Russia 2018.
That's Hector Cooper, CAF's 2017 Coach of the Year, who will be in charge of the Pharaohs of Egypt at this year's World Cup in Russia. And fans of the Pharaohs can mark their calendars now. The Egyptian team will play its opening World Cup match June 15th when it takes on Uruguay in Yekaterinburg, Russia. Some sad African football news out of Angola. The top club, Sagrada Esperança, has announced the death of 23-year-old defender Ntakoo Zibakaka during a preseason camp in the western city of Benguela. Zibakaka was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Angolan club says he became ill during training and was pronounced dead before he could reach a hospital. In a statement, the club said, and I quote, "With a painful heart, the club sadly informs the public, fans, and other members about the sudden death of our player, Ntakoo Zibakaka. We convey our deepest sympathy to his family as they try to come to terms with their loss." Just ahead, we'll hear from former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. January 17th marks what would have been the 76th birthday of the late boxing great Muhammad Ali, who died in 2016. Former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes is one of only five men to beat Ali during his memorable prize-fighting career. On October 2, 1980, in Las Vegas, Nevada, Holmes battered and pummeled Ali before Ali's trainer, Angelo Dundee, told the referee to stop the fight after 10 rounds. It was the only time Muhammad Ali ever lost a fight by stoppage. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to an interview by my VOA colleague Shaka Sali with Larry Holmes shortly after Muhammad Ali's passing. And the interview began with Shaka asking Holmes for his reaction to Muhammad Ali's death.
It hurt me because not only he was a friend of mine, but I think he was one of the greatest fighters ever lived in this world.
You happen to be one of the elite five boxers that, in fact, defeated at one time Muhammad Ali. But yet again, you happen perhaps to be a very unique individual, given that you were his former sparring partner, a friend, and of course, eventually a world heavyweight champion. What was it like to fight Muhammad Ali?
It was a good pleasure fighting Muhammad because, you know, he was my friend and he was my boss. And then I had to fight him, you know, but then it was the money thing, you know. If I beat him, I'd be the old man. If I lost, I never had anything. So, you know, my thing was not to take it hard on him because, you know, I knew how he would fight. And I knew that I could beat him. So I don't want to hurt Muhammad Ali because he is my friend. And so when we fought, you know, I told him don't get hurt. Just don't go crazy out there. I said, I don't want to hurt nobody. I don't want you to be hurt. And, you know, he told me, shut up and fight, you know. And I did what I had to do without hurting him, I think. I don't think I hurt him. And, you know, we remained friends because right after the fight, I went back to his dressing room and I told him, I gave him a hug and told him I love him. And he said, if you love me, why you beat me up like that, Dad? So, you know, he was a great man. And he wasn't angry with me or nothing like that because it was about the money. He got $10 million, and, you know, back then, that was a lot of money, you know? So he was happy, and we remained friends even after the fight.
Any particular reason, Larry, why you cried after the bout? You don't seem really to have enjoyed the fight.
I don't enjoy the fight. He was my friend. He was my boss. You know what I mean? You know, he was a guy that helped teach me how to fight. I mean, when I first went with him in 1971, I was just an amateur. I was learning how to fight. And he gave me the opportunity to come to his camp and work out with him and learn from him. He gave me that opportunity. When I worked out with Muhammad Ali for the very first time, we went to Reading, Pennsylvania. He gave me gloves and shoes, everything to box with. And he gave me the opportunity to box. And when he boxed with me, of course, he gave me the black eye, right? He gave me the black eye, and I loved it. And I said, okay. He wanted to put ice on my eye, and I won't let him put ice. He goes, why? I said, because I'm showing this off. Muhammad Ali hit me in my eye. I said, this is nice. I can show it off. And, you know, he told me I was crazy, put the ice, but I never put ice. And then when I got home, I bragged about Muhammad Ali boxing me and giving me a black eye. It was a brag. Yeah, I bragged about it.
Now, knowing him the way you did, and of course you have to be one of the few very unique individuals that do that, do you sincerely feel, do you sincerely think that it was necessary for Muhammad Ali to fight the last two fights? I'm talking about yours and the one of Trevor Babik in the Bahamas.
Yeah, well, Trevor Babik, he didn't need to fight, but what it was about was the money. It was about the money with Ali. He started fighting for money after he couldn't beat me. He just said, I'll take a fight with money. And I didn't like that fight. I didn't think he should have took it. But again, you can't tell people what to do because, you know, the man, when I do tell him that he's the champ, I said, shut up. He can do what he want to do, so I don't say anything. Well, if he was the champ, in my opinion, he was always going to be the champ. So, you know, the Berbick fight, the Trevor Berbick fight, Trevor Berbick didn't fight the Ali that I fought. If he did, he would have got beat.
You, again, happen to be one of the few people that interacted with him in a very special manner. What is it that during that experience, really, that you learned? What did you learn from him, and what did that interaction mean to you?
Hey, listen, I got the best jab in boxing. I had the best jab in boxing because of Muhammad Ali, because I tried to keep up with him. And when he threw the jab, I wanted to throw the jab. I wanted to beat him to the jab because everybody knew how Ali was. Everybody knew that he was a good jabber. He always jabbed right-hand combination. And I wanted to be like that, so I worked on that, to beat him to the jab. And that's why I lasted so long in boxing, because I had a good jab. Everybody had to worry about the Larry Holmes jab. And then when they worried about the Larry Holmes jab, then they had to worry about the right. And so they couldn't do both, and I was able to win the fight.
What was it like being with him in Zaire back in 1974? I'm talking about the Rambo in the jungle.
In the jungle. I was there with him. I was there with Muhammad Ali, the Rambo in the jungle, in Zaire. And he trained good. I mean, you know, people love him. Ali Boumaye. Ali Boumaye.
I kill him. I kill him.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all... A lot of people that didn't speak good English, but they know how to say Ali Boumaye. We didn't know how to speak African, so we said Ali Boumaye. You know, we said the same thing, Ali Boumaye, Ali Boumaye. And it was neat. And people, everywhere you go, people love you. You know, they run after, they take little kids running behind the car, Ali, Ali, Ali. I mean, you know, it was mind-boggling. And you know what Ali said? He said, boy, he said, you're home. This is home, man. This is what our people look like. This is what we look like. And you know, he was very proud to be in Zaire. And I was just as proud as he was because I was with the greatest fighter of all time.
Any particular reason why the people preferred Ali to the champion himself, George Foreman?
George Foreman, though, it was okay boxing, but you know, but George Foreman they didn't like George Foreman. I mean, you know, because Ali, they loved Ali, they didn't like George Foreman because George Foreman wasn't no Muhammad Ali. Everywhere Ali go, people go with him, but George, they didn't do that with George. That's okay because I didn't like George either.
I see. Have you been to Africa, Lale, since 1974?
I did not go to Zaire, but I've been to different parts of Africa already. Yeah, I've been to different parts.
What is it like to be a world heavyweight champion of the world? And you were for many years.
Well, it was an honor to be the heavyweight champion of the world. It's an honor to work, to represent black fighters that can be able to do something. It was great to honor white fighters if they work hard enough, they can be something. You know, it means something when anybody that works hard as I work can be anything that they want to be. You know, whether you're black, whether white, or orange, or green color, I don't care. If you work at something, you can always be that. Ali was living proof that if you work at it, you can be it. And he was Wayne's example. He immortalized boxing, and he would go down as one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I'm just glad to say that I was one of the guys who helped him become one of the great fighters of all time.
That's former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes, and he was talking with my VOA colleague Shaka Sali. And that interview originally aired on our Straight Talk Africa program in 2016. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. Just ahead, some National Basketball Association news, and I'll chat with our new sports social media reporter, Brianna Muir.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest bitter part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
Check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. VOAnews.com.
In National Basketball Association action Tuesday night, the Miami Heat, the Portland Trail Blazers, the Dallas Mavericks, and the Los Angeles Lakers all posted victories. The Heat was involved in the tightest game of the evening. They edged the host Toronto Raptors by 1 point, 90-89. Wayne Ellington converted a go-ahead driving layup with less than a second remaining in the game to lift Miami to victory. With that win, Miami also snapped Toronto's 12-game home winning streak. Meanwhile, the Portland Trail Blazers began a four-game road trip with a 117-106 victory over the Oklahoma City Thunder. C.J. McCollum had 27 points and 7 assists for Portland. In Texas, the host Dallas Mavericks scored a 114-99 victory over the Orlando Magic, while in a matchup between two California-based clubs, the Los Angeles Lakers defeated the Sacramento Kings 99-86. Meanwhile, the NBA will be playing some hoops in the British capital on Thursday. The Boston Celtics will go up against the Philadelphia 76ers at the O2 Arena in London as the league tries to expand its marketing appeal overseas. Joining us once again on the show is sports social media reporter Brianna Muir. Sporty greetings, Brianna.
Sporty greetings, Sonny.
Welcome back, Brianna. Last week, I remember you telling our VOA listeners how one of your recent sports experiences was interning for my favorite NBA team, the Washington Wizards. How was that experience?
Absolutely amazing. It was exclusive. I was extremely lucky, and it was very eventful. My first day as an intern, I worked on a commercial for the White House that featured John Wall and Paul Pierce. At the time, the Wizards were very close to the, I guess, the president at the time, Barack Obama, so they took frequent trips. So they even did the Easter egg roll during Easter and several commercials, but I don't believe that's no longer the case.
And of course, President Obama, a big basketball fan.
Definitely, definitely. Also, I had the opportunity to see a behind-the-scenes look at the Wizards' everyday operations, so their digital media, their production, and broadcast departments.
Now, I know some of our listeners might be wondering, I'm wondering, what do you do as an intern for an NBA club like the Wizards?
Attend practices, games, go on shoots. It really varied because I interned for the Capitals, the Wizards, the Mystics, and DC United. So since they're both winter and spring sports, and while I was there, I did almost everything.
Okay. Now, I remember before the NBA season tipped off, you returned to the Wizards Arena for a report on international players with the Wizards. How did you feel about that?
At the time, Kevin Serafin was on the roster, so they kind of had, the Wizards had a French connection, but he no longer plays for the Wizards. But ultimately, I think that the Wizards did a great job celebrating their international squad. Just being a part of DC, they were connected with local embassies, and they have constant celebrations throughout the year. So they have a Polish night, and they also celebrate Chinese New Year. They have a huge festival that's around the whole arena, and they have custom jerseys.
I follow Marcin Gortat. He's the Wizards center on Facebook from Poland. He seems pretty active on social media, Brianna. Are there other Wizards who kind of catch your eye when it comes to social media?
Definitely. Thomas Soratansky. He has a unique sense of style. He defines it as Euro style. He takes several pictures with Gortat and a few of the other international players on the squad. He was featured on the Czech Elle magazine front cover this spring, and then he also connects well with the Wizards' international players.
You mentioned last week how your favorite team, mine's the Wizards, but your favorite team is the San Antonio Spurs. Like the Wizards, they have a few international players. Do you have a favorite Spur?
My favorite player of all time is Tony Parker.
Okay.
He's only played for San Antonio, and it's the only jersey I own that's in my house.
Okay.
Currently, he's the point guard with the most rings. He won championships in 03, 05, 07, and 14. Just a recap of his background, he was drafted in 2001. He was picked number 28. A few years ago, he released a French rap album titled TP. It's kind of his alter ego. And he co-directed a film. So he does everything.
Did you buy that rap album by Tony Parker?
Actually, I did. At the time, he was married to Eva Longoria, but they're divorced. But I did. It was actually pretty good. He has a few. I think he was featured with Booba and a few other, I think, U.S. artists, rap artists.
Finally, Brianna, I mentioned how the Celtics and 76ers are going to be playing in London on Thursday. What do you think about that game being played in the British capital?
I think it's great. I think that the Redskins actually had a game in London. So I think that it's great that sports are actually going to different countries and letting, I guess, their fans are growing their fan base internationally. So I think it's great.
All right, Brianna Muir, thanks, and we'll hear from you again on Thursday. Thanks, Brianna. And that wraps up the January 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Zubair Taieb. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Journalism remains a dangerous profession in too many places around the world. On October 16th, Daphne Caruana Galizia, a journalist reporting on corruption in Malta as part of the Panama Papers investigation, was killed by a car bomb. In September, attackers set fire to the car of Yulia Latinina, a columnist for Novaya Gazeta and host of a weekly radio show in Russia. Protecting journalists and media practitioners against violence from those who may want to censor them is a core tenet of freedom of expression, said Shannon McGuire, a media advisor with USAID's Bureau for Europe and Eurasia, promoting independent media development. Since 1992, more than 800 journalists have been murdered around the world, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ. Of those cases, 86% were killed with impunity, meaning no one has been held responsible. In Russia, which ranks in the top 10 of CPJ's list, the attack on Latinina was just the latest in a series of assaults and threats against Russian journalists and opposition figures that have not resulted in formal charges. In Ukraine, the murder of prominent investigative journalist Pavel Sheremet also remains unsolved more than a year later. The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, has prioritized support to independent media in Europe and Eurasia since beginning work there in 1992. Its programs focus both on the supply and demand sides of news and information, as well as advocating for greater press freedom. One such program is the Regional Investigative Journalism Network, which helps shield reporters from attack by making it more difficult for criminals to pinpoint those who have exposed their wrongdoings. In Ukraine, USAID's U-Media project has collaborated with more than 500 independent media outlets to ensure that professional journalists operate safely and protect their data in conflict areas in eastern Ukraine and Crimea while they report on the fighting and Russian occupation. Donors, policymakers, advocacy organizations, and civil society organizations must continue to exert pressure on those involved in censorship to ensure the continuation of open, public debate and the free flow of information. Journalists are not soldiers, and their cameras and pens are not weapons, said Ms. McGuire. They shouldn't need to fear the phrase, "Don't kill the messenger."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.